Hello, I'd like to call the House Education and Finance Committee to order. Thank you, everyone. We do have a quorum, and let's see, Representative Peterson, if you have you had a chance to review the minutes yet?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I would like to move to approve the minutes.
Representative Peterson moves the minutes. Any comments? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
And the minutes are moved. All those opposed say no. Okay. All right, with that, our first bill up is House File 3679, and we have Chair Loon at the table. And if that, Chair Loon, if you'd like to move your bill and introduce your bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 3679 be laid over for possible inclusion.
And Chair Loon moves her bill, House File 3679. So with that, if you'd like to introduce, and then we'll bring up testifiers.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the committee members, I'll be very brief because I think the testimony that will be presented today will be really very powerful and really explain the bill better than I could. But, you know, simply put, with all of the stories that we've been hearing recently in the media and increasing incidences that have been conveyed to me by teachers of being subject to really violence by students in their classroom. And we know that these students in most cases are very troubled, suffering from mental illness or some other type of behavioral disorders. But there's the situation is becoming very acute, I think, in certain situations. And so my bill would provide for a few things to try to address this. First of all, as you know, information is provided from the school districts to the commissioner for school performance reports. And there is data currently provided or information forwarded from the districts on incidences of perhaps student-on-student incidences, but not specifically where something might occur between a student harming a teacher. And to really get a handle on how, if this is a huge problem or a growing problem, I require that that information be provided so we really know on a statewide basis what's happening with regards to these incidences. Secondly, I think, and most importantly, this bill would establish the teacher's authority per the statute, but reinforcing their authority over their classroom. Teachers are professionals, they're highly trained, and we trust them to educate our students and to have control over what happens in their classrooms. If a teacher and their professional judgment and wisdom feels that a student is posing a threat to the other students in that room or to themselves, a teacher should have the authority and would under this legislation to have a child removed from the classroom. I don't get into the question of what happens with regards to any discipline measures for that student. Don't get into requiring that certain steps be taken by the district. I feel that those discipline and behavioral policies are best addressed locally and per the district with their staff and administrators. But a teacher that feels, again, a situation is unsafe, in my opinion and for this bill, would have the ability to have a child removed from the classroom to protect the safety of other students and themselves. If a student would be placed in a classroom that has a history of violent behavior, a teacher should know that information to be aware and to be prepared, and so this bill would provide that as well. And then finally, I would establish a Victims of School Violence Fund so that if school personnel had been injured and had a situation with a student, and if there were no other means available to provide for their medical expenses that may occur or legal expenses for that school staff person, this fund would be available for that purpose. So that's briefly what the bill does, Mr. Chair. And with that, I think the committee would be interested in hearing from our testifiers.
And Madam Chair, before we move any further, I believe you have an author's amendment that you would like to move to put the bill in the shape that you'd like.
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair.
And so with that, members, the A1 amendment is offered up. And if you'd like to speak briefly to your amendment.
Yes. One other thing that occurred to me after filing the bill was that teachers, the information that a teacher had been injured in that, and in the course of reporting that injury, as they may be advised to do by school security or safety personnel, you know, those police reports become public information. And so this was an incident that occurred recently, and this would provide really almost a whistleblower protection provision for school personnel, so that if a report of an incident about a student's violent conduct occurs, the teacher is protected under the statute from disclosure of information.
And so with that, members, I'll go ahead and move the A1 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? And the A1 amendment carries. The bill is in the shape that you'd like.
Thank you.
With that, and members, we'll take questions as soon as we get through the testifiers. I have four testifiers, so if Ms. Rosner would like to come up, and on deck would be Mr. Cummers, and then behind that would be Ms. York and Mr. Uni. And as you come up, please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. So, is it Ms. Rosner?
Rosner,
thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angie Rosner, and I'm a math teacher at Eden Prairie High School, and I also live in the Eden Prairie School District. I am here to support the direction Representative Loon is taking in House File 3679. Let me start by emphasizing that assaults on teachers and school staff are unacceptable. I recently spoke to a colleague who received a violence notification regarding a student in their class. The teacher had no idea if this was a small fight in the hallway or if it was for an assault of a teacher or a staff member. As teachers, we want to be informed of specifics regarding students' behavior so that we can create the best learning environment for all learners. Let me make a comparison of when students need assistance in the classroom, teachers would receive an IEP or a 504 plan. If a student has a health concern, teachers are notified by the school nurse and a plan is set up how best to assist that student. If a student has been involved in an assault, the teachers need to be notified. A teacher needs to be prepared for all situations in the classroom, and they need to be able to access appropriate resources such as counselors, deans, social workers, and school psychologists. Teachers realize that it is important to have as much information about a student in terms of their learning needs and behavior needs in the classroom. Teachers are constantly working to create relationships with students and their families so that each learner within the classroom can and will be successful. This bill is a step in the right direction. It requires districts to report incidences involving assaults, and it also gives teachers the ability to remove a student from the classroom if there is a question of safety within that classroom for both the students and the teacher. We really appreciate Representative Loon's efforts in this complicated issue and look forward to continuing to work with her in the future. We want to thank the committee for its commitment to safe schools for all students, teachers, and staff. Thank you.
And thank you very much. And it's Rosner, right? Ms. Rosner.
Rosner.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Cummers. And please tell me I got that one right.
You did.
All right.
Thanks.
And if you state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Sure will. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Chris Commers. I am a social studies teacher from Eastern Carver County Schools, serving now as the Chaska Education Association president. And I'm just going to take a few minutes to tell you a brief story about a colleague of mine. About a month ago, a colleague of mine was supervising the lunchroom when he encountered a fight between two students. He stepped in between the two students to separate them, and while his back was turned to one student, he was struck repeatedly in the back and shoulder, and he was grabbed and twisted, kind of almost doing an involuntary pivot. The fight was stopped. My colleague went to the school nurse's office. The nurse immediately said, "You need to see a doctor." And so the next within hours, he went and saw a GP, who told him that he had been the victim of an assault, and that's the way he described the symptoms, which included bruises, pulled muscles, and injury to a knee. Right now, following the incident in his building, there was an announcement to all of the adults in the building that supervision and safety procedures needed to be invigorated and energized, but there was no mention of the nature of the incident that had occurred. My colleague has now been referred to an orthopedic surgeon, and he's wondering how he will pay for treatment that may occur as a result of this injury. The student, we later learned, is what we term a level 3, a child who has behavioral challenges, and since the incident has now been paired with a paraprofessional who accompanies him throughout the day, and he has been very successful, the child has, since the incident. But we're very grateful to Representative Loon for authoring this bill, because we do think that it addresses kind of a gap that we have right now in terms of safety for not only adults in schools but also fellow students, and this bill definitely helps with that. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
And thank you for your testimony. And if you just want to have a seat in the back in case there's a question for you, to come back up.
Great.
Thank you. Ms. York. And then Mr. Uni after. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me to speak in support of Bill House File 3679.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. I do need you to say your name for the record.
Debbie York.
Thank you.
Today I'm standing up for teachers because of being a licensed professional in this state means sacrificing your own safety for the protection of your students and other staff. My profession is in serious trouble. I am just one teacher left behind, ignored by the system. I am one retired first grade teacher turned citizen lobbyist. I decided to become involved when at one time or another, my employer, my union, and ultimately the legal system failed me after I was assaulted by a student in my classroom, requiring 3 major surgeries, which ended my career. Based on my firsthand knowledge and experiences, I'm speaking out today with the encouragement of many educators, administrators, and citizens. Until now, I have been silenced from telling these truths, but I'm no longer going to be silenced. Teachers have lost their voice. Teachers are told they will be coached what to say to whom about classroom and school disruptive behavior. Teachers are told to shred, delete computer documents showing student violence that does not support the administrative spin. They are challenged with students who disrupt, scream, torment, bully, hit, kick, use pencils, desks, and chairs as weapons. Teachers get assaulted, they get injured, and then they're silenced. teachers are disciplined for sharing observations and experiences if they violate the need-to-know rule. Teachers are labeled as racists. They are branded as insensitive to students of color and culture after they are assaulted, and then they are investigated for reporting the event. They are often not provided student history. Teachers won't talk for fear of retaliation and threats of termination. And they are perceived as annoying and unprofessional when they seek support from administrators and union reps on behavior issues. With State Representative Ed Loon, Bill House File 3679, we are going to see fewer students with severe mental health issues creating crisis in our classrooms. Troubled students will receive early and immediate intervention. Implementation of safety policies will be complete and effective and help build the school community that we all want for our children. District management will be held accountable as aggressive behavior is moving from the hallway and the playground and the parking lot to the classroom, where teachers do have responsibility but not the time, not the training to support and manage students who demonstrate emotional and behavioral disturbances. To protect teachers, crisis intervention will require district and union collaboration focused on teachers being heard and building community. Public perception is that the union is responsible when it comes to these types of school problems. However, it is my experience in most union district contracts, management of the building is the district's responsibility, not the union's. In my situation, I was told safety is not a grievable issue without language in the master contract. So my union was unable to get this sentence, quote, "The district will provide a safe working environment," unquote, into our teaching contract. Why? I think it would be helpful for us to understand that. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to pass Working Bill, House File 3679, and now is the time. The time is right for you to listen to teachers with experiences like me, to hold district leaders responsible for creating and managing safe schools, to ensure parents and students know, understand, and are equally responsible in committing to the culture and standards of their school community, to recognize that data privacy laws can do more harm than good when teachers cannot openly discuss with courageous conversations disruptive behavior and how to address it with other professionals who can help. As a 30-year master's degree professional teaching in three different communities throughout those years, I have to tell you I can't help but wonder, how can teachers teach and students learn when they feel threatened and fear for their safety in their classroom environment? Passing this bill will start repairing this broken educational system and give teachers back the voice they need. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you, State Representative Loon. I'd be happy to answer any questions later. Thank you so much for listening.
And thank you, Ms. York. Mr. Ooney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Loon, my name is Adosh Ooney. I'm the Government Relations Director at the Department of Education. First of all, I want to say that the Commissioner Department and myself are extremely deeply sympathetic with the testifiers and all their colleagues who have suffered assaults, as well as students who have suffered assaults as well. I think this conversation brings up a lot of really important issues, and we've heard on other bills, like Representative Christensen's Discipline Working Group, the need to discuss these issues in an open, collaborative, transparent manner. I would say, going back to Representative Christensen's working group, that the department feels that at this point, that's the best way forward, so we can all come together with the stakeholders and experts together to suss out the issues. We have a lot of working parts, whether it be assaults on teachers, fair discipline for students, and how to work through privacy issues as well. The working group brings together a lot of stakeholders. The department is happy to facilitate the conversation to make sure that we get it right in a comprehensive manner. I'd also like to say there's portions that have the department collect data. We want to make sure that if we do end up collecting data on incidences, that we do it in the right manner, so we have a conversation about the most effective allocation of our resources to really get to the heart of the issue here and get the data that gives us the trends to help us pursue policies to rectify the situations in the future. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony, and I can take any questions.
And Mr. Uni, if you could, just one quick question from me. You had mentioned that you think the best way would be to continue the working group. Do you think that's fast enough to address this issue? Do you think the timeline for that would be expedient enough?
Mr. Chair, committee members, we do understand that the situation that we're dealing with here is a daily situation. But I think what weighs heavily in favor of the working group is getting the issue right, so that we are following law correctly, we're capturing all the issues, and we've considered every consequence.
Okay, thank you. And with that, Representative Loon, did you want to respond, or I can go right to questions?
I think we just go right to questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And so the first, I have four on the list so far, Representative Slocum. And Representative Murphy, did you want to be added? Or are you just waving? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really like this bill. We've heard a lot about mental health issues in the schools. As a teacher, when I was teaching, I had a desk thrown at me and a boombox, and I was quick on my feet, so I didn't have to. I had no injuries. But I know of other people that have. And one of my rules in the classroom was never step between two girls that are fighting. Tell them stop, but never step between them because they'll kill you to get to that other girl. Whereas the boys, it's a lot of posturing, or more posturing. With the girls, they really want to do harm. So, anyway, I love this bill, and I signed on as a co-author, I believe, and had a similar bill, somewhat similar bill. And what this is going to do is draw a laser focus on the mental health issues that we have in our schools. They are abundant. They are in every school district, and we need to hone in on them. I don't think we need to suss it out more. Pardon me, Adosh, we're friends, but I think we need to act. And this will bring us the data as legislators to make some valid choices on mental health support in our schools. We do a lot of talking. This is an action bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, I thought you, in fact, I'm sure you said that assaults on either a teacher or a student, and then I thought you said in the classroom, and so I was quickly going through here and didn't pick up where it included students, but I hope it does. Not just assaults on teachers, but also I'm concerned that it's limited to the classroom or even to the school building, because I know of a school not in my district, but a lot of constituents go there, that there's been quite a few complaints by teachers about the administration of that school covering up assaults on other students. And it sometimes it happens in the school classroom, sometimes in the school building, sometimes on the school grounds, and even with one school in my district, it's happening where, like within a block of the school, they just get off the school grounds, and then students attack another student or something like that. So it would seem if it's school related, it should be included in this.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mullery. Well, I'd be happy to follow up and discuss specific suggestions you'd have on the bill if we were laying it over today, so for possible amendment. But just to clarify, one of my earlier comments were that the school performance reports, there is information, aggregate information in those about student on student incidences of violence, but right now there is no aggregate information that's collected or reported by the department on student to school personnel or teacher violence incidents. So I just want to make sure that that information is being gathered and reported in the aggregate in that current report. So that was what I was referring to on that. And I think you raised a valid point about things that may occur outside the school building, maybe even off of school grounds. It's an interesting thing to ponder. But again, my point in offering this today and for discussion is to really reinforce that in many cases, and as we heard, I think Ms. York touched on, is that if teachers are being told that, whatever happens in your classroom is basically your problem, and you're not allowed to send a student out even when they're posing a threat, is causing injury, in some cases very severe to our teachers, and most certainly if there's other students, and that may be reported. But this is occurring, I think, with greater frequency. The fact that it's not reported, we don't even know how widespread it is. But it wasn't difficult to find people to talk to where these incidences had occurred.
Thank you. Representative Mullery, follow up?
No thank.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moon, I've got several questions and a few observations, and I don't think we're going to have enough time to get all the things I want to talk about, so perhaps you and I can continue this conversation afterwards, but I just want to lay out some things here real quickly. First of all, I want to say that I totally understand workforce safety issues, and I totally understand where a lot of professionals in our instructional profession have concerns and want us to act in a way that allows them to be good professionals. So I just want to get that out because I think some of the other things I'm going to say may have the unfortunate perception that I'm not caring about that issue. This bill raises some big concerns for me. And frankly, the biggest concern is that it feels to me like we're taking a righteous issue and zeroing in kind of in a silo way to address what I think is a big systemic issue. And I don't think that this big systemic issue in our schools and our society, it's neither accurate nor fair for us to adopt the perspective that that those issues are totally the result of student-initiated behaviors. I think when you look at, we're not alone, members, in this state and across the nation, when you look at the incredible disparities that exist in the administration of school discipline practices that fall squarely, unarguably, along racial lines, it begs the question about big systemic behaviors and attitudes and what our design is relative to what the realities are in our classroom. And I know some folks can pretty quickly blame teachers for all that, to flip it. just as an observation, it is interesting for me that in a state where we have not moved the racial diversity of our teaching professional class not one percentage in 30 years, while the diversity of our student population has grown exponentially. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to think about the incredible possibilities for total misunderstanding and miscommunications and misperceptions between adults and young people in that scenario. We've got several bills, and the chair has heard several of those in regards to diversifying our teaching corps. I think that's part of the issue here, so I'm glad that we're moving ahead with that. But I do think that for us to attempt to step in with this bill without looking at the broader disparities issues and the broader discipline practices that exist in our state would be a real big mistake. And I think, quite frankly, may create unintended consequences relative to what we're seeking here. I know Representative Christensen has a bill. I believe we passed it out of Representative Erickson's committee. I would hope that we very seriously consider his bill. It's a broad look at this issue. I think that the issues here on the table in this bill can and should be considered within that. I've got a bill that I would urge this committee to hear. We did pass that through Representative Erickson's committee as well earlier, that gets at some of these issues, and whether we move it or not, I think it's important for us to spend some time thinking about these big issues particularly related to race, and particularly related to some of the statutory constructs that we have right now that I believe set up really unfortunate interactions between students and teachers. I do like, and I think it was Ms. York who testified earlier, I do like that there's a call here for districts to be held to a high level of accountability for maintaining climate safety in our schools. I think that's absolutely correct. I think there's just something unfair about having individual teachers, one by one, trying to establish what that norm is for a school. I do note that there was some testimony about mental health issues. I looked through the bill. There's nothing here on mental health. If that's the issue that we're attempting to address, then I think we should zero in on that issue as opposed to attempting to do something that's pretty broad without having a fuller, deeper dive into the design of our discipline practices in our state. So with that, I just have a couple of very quick questions for you, Representative Loon. On the bill, and in Section 1, Subdivision 1, the bill talks about each physical assault. So how are we defining physical assault? What is the definition for the purposes of this piece of legislation? What's the standard? What are we referring to? I mean, I know, you know, for me, in the real world, I know an assault when I see one. But in the law, there are different consequences that arise from describing an assault. And so, I guess that's my question to you. What is the intent of the author in terms of applying this language for this bill?
Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Mariani. And I will actually ask Mr. Strom to offer a comment on that because, as you know, I don't provide a separate definition, but in working to draft this bill, I think there's probably some parameters already in statute. But I just wanted to also comment on your prefacing remarks in that. And, you know, I'd be happy to continue working with you. And let me state also that I don't think that my bill, eliminates the need for perhaps Representative Christian's working group on discipline and other things. I do think that the two things could work in tandem because I don't provide for specific disciplinary measures for a student that is removed from a classroom. What my bill is attempting to do is provide some immediate relief for teachers and staff people in their classrooms that feel they're having a dangerous situation that's occurring in their classroom, but they maybe have been told by their administrators in that don't call the office because the student is in your classroom, or they've asked for help, or they've asked for an evaluation of a student that they have great concerns about and it's been denied. So I'm trying to offer some immediate help and in fact just really showing deference and appreciation for the difficult situation many of our teachers have been in, and I don't feel like they're getting the relief and attention to that they deserve. And then, again, I think the working group can move forward in trying to sort out, I think, some very valid questions and points you raise about it is a very complex topic. But I think this is, again, an attempt to try to reinforce some safety for teachers and, as important, for the students, the other students in that classroom, as incidences may occur. So, but Mr. Chair, I would ask if Mr. Strom would want to comment on the physical assault definition.
Mr. Strom, if you could help us out.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon and Mariani, let me just check for a moment here. I want to make sure I'm on the same page with Ms. Larson about this.
Mr. Chair, that's fine. And if
that can we come back to this one?
Yeah, we can come back, or if it takes too long, I can certainly follow up, Representative Loon. You know, for the record, I've expressed my concern. Yep. About a possibly overly broad standard here, which may raise all sorts of complications, legal complications for our system, for our students and teachers. But let me, if I may...
Yes, so Mr. Strom, if you guys would come up with, if it's a quick definition, offer it up. Otherwise, we can do it after. Representative Mariani, if you want to go on to your next question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll just ask one more question and make one more observation here, because I know others want to weigh in. And it's to this point, and fair enough, Representative Loon, I think you're attempting to deal with a very specific issue with an understanding that at this point there's some kind of gap in terms of redress or a course of action for teachers. I respect that. I do think, however, that in the course of doing that, we may well be stepping into defining what the dominant culture in our state shall be around discipline practices in K-12. So, for instance, on page 2, we've got section 3, which is the required policy. The new language says that existing language is that the school board must adopt a written district-wide school discipline policy. And then there's new language here that says the policy must be consistent with the teacher's authority for controlling and managing student behavior in the classroom under section 122A, which is a section under general control of schools. Fair enough. The things that come to mind for me, however, have to do with how do we set appropriate curbs for teachers relative to the scope and extent of practices for controlling and managing student behavior? So does that mean, for instance, that it's okay for a school, it's appropriate for us to have a school policy that says that a teacher can initiate the use of force attempting to answer, remediate a particular situation? Is it appropriate for a teacher to verbally challenge a student in a certain way that arguably might escalate the situation? Law enforcement right now is in the midst of that very discussion all across the country. There is a science of policing that has to do with de-escalating situations based on sound social research. And so for me, I'm not sure whether this is good or not. It just feels to me, Representative Loon, like we're stepping quickly into one particular area to answer one particular set of circumstances which may open the door for a broader impact on what happens in adult student teacher kids discipline situations. So I'm not going to ask the question because I think this is the kind of conversation that perhaps of a Representative Christensen task force we could spend a lot more time carefully exploring. I would be real nervous about the legislature opening up new lines of authority without understanding where that might lead, given the very real human dynamics that exist in our society that fall along racial lines with lots of room for misunderstanding between adult instructors and young students. So I'd love to have this continuous conversation with you. I would hope we'll continue it as we consider the other bills as well. I understand your intent. My fear is that we may be moving too quickly without looking at what the broader impacts are on our discipline disparity, or rather, what the impact is on discipline disparities, but what impact there could be on our entire culture and design of discipline practices in the state of Minnesota.
And thank you for that. With that, and I'll, if you need to respond, but I have three more people on the list. Are you good? I mean, I think what you brought up was spot on, and thank you. We have three more people on the list and a number of other bills to get to. I'm going to try to keep us moving. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. You've certainly picked a hot topic, much in the media today. We don't, I think, maybe because of the lack of your bill, have data as to whether these incidents are actually increasing, decreasing, the same. We do know that they're gaining a lot more media attention. That would explain the TV cameras here today. I am confused about a couple of areas of your bill. For instance, Section 2, the establishment of the repayment fund. I was injured when I was teaching in an interaction with a student with some challenging behavioral issues. Ended up in the emergency room. My medical costs were entirely paid by workman's comp. There's no language here on how this new state fund would interact with workers' comp. And I don't know a lot about workers' comp, but I know it's complicated. And interfering with that without language on how those two, this system and that system, would interact may be problematic. Also, you actually take a leverage of accountability off school districts here, because if a school district is currently accountable for legal fees of a teacher stemming from an incident, you now take over those legal fees to the state, where it'll be less of a lever for the school district. So I'm a little unclear and confused by that. I do appreciate Section 4 on more notification to teachers. I'm a big believer on need to know. If that kid is in my classroom, I need to know. But you've left out everybody else in a school building who needs to know. So if I've got an educational assistant in my classroom, they also need to know that that student is now in our classroom. The school nurse, the school social worker, the school administrators also need to know, but you've left them out. So I'm a little confused by a couple of the provisions in your bill. I guess I'm more broadly concerned that you've identified the goal as immediate relief of teachers.
Representative Dabney, one moment. You've asked three questions. I'm wondering,
I haven't asked any questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then I'll let you finish. I thought you had three areas of concern. Okay, my apologies.
I was identifying areas of concern. I was dealing with Mariani. Broad base.
Those of us who are
but not as well.
We were fine, but I wanted to make sure.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you. Your stated goal is immediate relief for classroom teachers, but this entirely misses that goal. I went to the doctor yesterday. I've got a Band-Aid because of it. It isn't the Band-Aid that got me feeling better. It isn't the Band-Aid that's curing what ails me. It's the penicillin that I got seconds before they put the Band-Aid on that's helping me. And there's nothing here that helps. And you've had opportunities in the past, and there's more opportunities yet this session to help. Tomorrow afternoon in the Health and Human Services Committee, I've got a bill up to increase our state support for school-linked mental health grants. Currently, we have grants in 66% of the school districts across the state, not 66% of the schools, but districts. So, Mr. Chair, you're looking for a question, and probably everybody else is too. If the goal is immediate relief for teachers, and I hope we all recognize that relief for kids is what gives relief for teachers, will you contact Chairman Dean and ask him, as chair of the K-12 committee, that he fund school-linked mental health grants in my bill this year and increase the state funding for that program?
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Chair Loon.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Dabney. And to your last question first, yes, I'd be happy to talk with Chairman Dean about your bill. And I may have mentioned this before in a previous committee. I did a lot of traveling to various school districts across during the interim. And this is something that I heard from school districts no matter where I was in the state about, you know, increasing mental health needs of students coming with mental health issues and that. And so I know that the need is great and it has grown and we do need to address it. But I just want to address a couple of other things that you raised. And I don't know if this is in order or not, but I just tried to write them down on my bill. With regards to the notification, the current law, which I am proposing to amend, does say notifying classroom teachers and other school district employees having a legitimate educational interest in knowing about students with a history of violent behavior, and then I'm adding including any documented physical assault of a district employee. So I think that is addressed in the legislation as I propose it. And it is an important point. The Victims of School Violence Fund, again, also does include languages which states that medical and legal costs the employee incurs for which other compensation is not available. Now, perhaps I need to make this more clear, but it would certainly be assumed that, you know, workers' comp, health insurance, other things available would certainly be sort of the first providers of that. Of paying for those expenditures. This would only be sort of a fund of last resort, if you would. And I think, you know, with regards to other comments and those that Representative Mariani raised, again, discipline issues, growing mental health issues among students, all very important and all part of a bigger picture. I'm trying to make a first step here to reinforce that, you know, I don't know how we have schools and we have classrooms if there is not someone in charge in the classroom, and that is a teacher. And they hold a great deal of responsibility over their students' safety and their educational needs and that, and we hold them to a very high standard. But I think we need to also offer some protection and insurance to teachers that it's not okay to hit a teacher. That if a teacher feels threatened by that action or feels that their students are threatened by that action, that student can be removed from the classroom. Now, there may be some intervention that's necessary. Yes, we may increase the number of counselors available to help with that. But this starts with allowing the teacher to say, this is not a safe situation, and I'm able to say I need help, and this cannot be occurring in my classroom. And I think that's a really important statement for this committee and for this legislature to make. So, thank you.
Representative Demney, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your willingness to contact Chair Dean in support of increasing school-length mental health grants. It's House File 2731 for anybody who's following along at home. and there's no question that we all want schools to be safe places to learn, safe places to work. The question is, how do we get there? Putting me in charge and telling me I've got the authority, but not providing me with the resources doesn't get us to that goal. Again, the bill misses the target. Last year, Representative Bly, if I remember correctly, had a bill to require PBIS training, positive behavioral intervention strategies in schools across Minnesota. That's the sort of preventive work that keeps the assault from happening. Not what do we do after the assault has happened, which is your bill, but instead how do we prevent it? You didn't include it in your K-12 bill last year. I believe it's Representative Halverson, and here's, I'll shift from comment to question, but if I remember correctly, it's Representative Halverson this year who has a bill to increase funding for support services staff, school counselors, school nurses, school social workers. If I remember correctly, that bill has not gotten a hearing in this committee. That's under your authority. My last question is, will you provide Representative Halverson, if I'm correct, with a hearing this year, and will you include it in any K-12 bill this year? Because let's do the penicillin, not the Band-Aid.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney. Well, I'll respond to you this way. First, I don't have a target yet, so I am hearing some bills, but until I have a target to know what this committee's supplemental budget may or may not be, it's difficult for me to make, you know, assurances on anything we'll do. However, you know, I did fight very hard when our budget bill was passed last year to ensure that schools got a 2% increase unfettered from a particular mandate on how those funds would be spent in each of the 2 years of the biennium. And I would fully expect that schools will be making decisions with that funding provided to them of adding additional support personnel and doing the things that they know is necessary to address some of these issues. It's not always occurring. And as I've said, I try very hard to not prescribe to schools how they're spending that money. Now, with a bill like the one I'm proposing today, I would expect there could be some pressure to be brought upon administration if they're doing other things with that money, or if perhaps their 2% set aside for staff training is being used on something other than things that are critical or crisis nature within their schools. So, you know, while I think you make a good point here, I think there is some balance here of responsibility with addressing priorities within our schools. And, you know, I think we all do the best we can to try to provide the school with the resources they need. It's not always adequate. But with the resources they do get, we do expect them to make wise decisions. And addressing this concern, I think, is one of the things we do expect them to do.
Representative.
Last comment, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair. Increasing the formula is good. However, Minnesota Public Radio recently did an investigation on why we are 50th in the nation on school counselors. Actually, I think we're up to 49th in the nation, which is scant progress. And it may have something to do with where, when I was a kid going to Minnesota schools, I believe Minnesota ranked in the top 10 of school funding for states in the country. We're now, I believe, 24th. Absent targeted funding, schools are going to continue to do what they do, which is buy textbooks, hire teachers, and things like that. What we need, if we're serious about school climate, safe schools to learn in and safe schools to teach in, is targeted approaches that provide students with the help that they need through counselors and social workers and nurses and the like, and teachers with the resources that they need to better meet those students' needs. Absent that, I don't think we're going to make the progress we need to make. Will you hear Representative Halverson's bill?
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, I will look at our schedule, and if we can work it in, I will make every effort to do so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, My first question was about medical and legal costs that are in Section 2, for which other compensation is not available, but you clarified that in your previous comments. But my second question is about the effective date. Why did you pick the effective date on lines 217, 218?
Chairman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, well, that would be effective for the coming school year since we're in the middle of a current school year.
But, Madam Chair, aren't we in the 2016-17 school year? No. Okay, thank you. That's my... Okay, that makes sense then. So the assaults that have already taken place then in the 2016 school year would be covered for legal costs and medical costs.
Chairman.
excuse me, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I will defer to Mr. Strom just to make sure I'm correct in this, but with the bill's effective date for the next school year, the school year that starts in September of 2016 into 17, I would believe that things that occurred, like if something happened today, that they would not be covered by the proponents of my bill. But if I could defer to Mr. Strom just to make sure I'm correct in that.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I believe the funding was intended to start with fiscal year 17 and would be available starting July 1st, which is when the 16-17 school year starts. And it's a little ambiguous in my read whether or not an event that occurred before that, whether an application could be submitted to this fund or not. There's nothing that prohibits that in there, but there's nothing directly authorizing that. So perhaps more specificity either in the text or in the effective date would clarify that for all.
I think that's something to pursue. And then my last question and third question is on page 4, lines 4.4 and lines 4.4, the base appropriation for 2018. I know you don't have your targets, but do you have any idea of how much money this fund takes to initially start this fund?
Mr. Chair and Representative Chair. Murphy, thank you for the question. And the short answer is no. And I'm not sure if there's a model to look at from other states or not, and because I have no target, the blank appropriation is kind of what you may see in a few bills until we know more about what we may have.
But, Madam Chair, and this is similar to questions I've previously asked on bills, is there some figure that you've been talking about when you've talked with the people that think this bill is important of how much money we should be talking about? Are we talking $50,000, $500,000, $5 million, $1
million?
Is there some funding thing that I can just sort of put on my chart?
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, no. Actually, I don't have a target number in mind.
Is there a number that, Mr. Chair? Madam Chair, is there a number that you would not accept, that's too small to accept?
Representative Moon.
Representative Murphy, I think that all entirely depends upon my target.
Representative Murphy?
And Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, have you any idea of when your target's going to be discussed, if you are going to be talking about particular bills informing that target, or are you just talking basic numbers from a total amount that all committee chairs are going to be dividing up.
Representative.
I'm not sure I understand your
question. The cost of specific bills that we've heard in this committee where we haven't got any amounts of money for, are you going to be asked to submit numbers that could pay for those bills, a number for your target that could pay for those various bills that we are have on the table for possible inclusion?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Murphy, I think you're talking about the process that will ensue, and I would expect, and you know, if I receive it, when I receive a target, that I'll be asked for some information on how we might plan to spend that target money, if we're given money, and that process then will be one in which we'll undertake trying to put together a bill from the testimony that we've heard, from information that we've received on needs and proposals, and that will all be part of our process.
Thank you, Representative Loon.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Seltzer, you're the last one that I have on my list.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'll try to keep this brief. And I want to thank Representative Loon for bringing this bill forward and having this conversation and shining a light on this issue. And thank you for admitting that this, you know, this is a start, just to have this conversation, which is an excellent thing. I also want to thank the testifiers, including Ms. York, whom I know personally, for her amazing courage in continuing to pursue this effort. I know that she was a highly respected teacher in her school district, and I know that her process always was to seek ways to support and help her students. And so a lot of the areas that I was going to talk about were covered today, but I did want to touch on one area that I think is really important, both to your bill and just to the larger conversation, and that's the issue of student data portability, which you talk in your bill, and I was happy to see that, about ensuring that teachers have the knowledge so that they can set up environments and supports for students who have emotionally behavioral issues so they can succeed and so teachers are safe. And we do have an issue today where it's hard to believe in this electronic era that we still cannot transmit students' records electronically in real time. These students are often highly mobile. There's a reason they have these behaviors. Speaking to the larger issues that Representative Mariani and others have touched on, you know, just vast disparities in income, pressures on families, and so as a result, these students will often move frequently for economic reasons or because their parents are looking for an environment that will fit. And so I'm just wondering, Representative Loon, though I know there is already legislation on this and that we are working on setting up a system for this easy portability, there are some people in this field which feel that we're not too close to getting there. If you would consider adding wording in here, emphasizing the importance of making sure that this student information is being transmitted in real time. That's number one. And then I had one more comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Seltzer. And I would agree. I do think we need to do some work on that. You know, I have actually sponsored a bill, data backpack bill, which you know, I don't know that we're going to get to this session. But I think your comments are well placed. And as students are mobile, making sure that their information follows them in a timely manner is very important.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Loon. And I just had one more comment and something to consider, and that is we really, you know, have had a drive to have more support for our fine teachers in our classroom, more cultural competency. It's a huge puzzle, and we're trying to put the pieces together, and one part of that is our really poor nation, we're behind, I think we're 49th or 50th in the nation in our ratio of school counselors to students. I think it's 765-1. And so I just wanted to mention that we did hear a school counselor bill last year, which would help in that, and that, you know, you could bring that forward, you know, to include in an omnibus bill, and I would really encourage you to do that so that we can support our teachers and have great outcomes for students and for teachers.
Thank you. I appreciate the suggestion.
And thank you. And I'm sorry, Representative Detmer had a quick comment. I missed him.
Just a quick comment. And, you know, I listened to a lot of the discussions going on here, and thank you, Chair Lewin, for bringing this forward. I really think important is that Section 3 where you're bringing people together to discuss the, whether it's parents, law enforcement in the schools, and so forth. The key thing, though, is parents. You know, how many of us were brought up in the 50s and 60s when I grew up? Parents were really actively involved in their schools. And I really feel that kids back in our day learned the right and wrong at home, and what was appropriate conduct, what was appropriate behavior. And I think those are some of the things that maybe we're always trying to put Band-Aids on things and not really solving the issue is that kids come to school, and our school is a reflection of our society. And I think sometimes we forget that as educators. I spent 34 years in the classroom. One quick story. I couldn't do this today in the classroom, but back in the day, in the 70s, I broke up a fight. In my office, I kept these big boxing gloves in my office. I took them into the wrestling room, made them put the boxing gloves on, and they had to go at it. I wouldn't let them stop until they just didn't have any energy anymore, and they left the wrestling room as best friends. Could I do that today? No. We just have laws that would prevent us from doing that. I think of that story, and I think we're missing the boat sometimes when we're putting legislation together, that parents have to be involved in what we're doing in our schools. Thank you.
Representative Loon, I'll let you get the last word so we can move on.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank all of the committee members. I mean, I think a great discussion today, and hopefully you have come away at least with an understanding of how I am trying to at least start us down the road of ensuring that we are providing protections for our teachers. They are the first line of defense, and often in an incident that may happen in school, in their classrooms, and as you've heard today, many of them are afraid to share their experiences. They're afraid to speak out. They're afraid to offer experiences they've had for fear of retaliation. And this is not how incredibly important professionals who have such a critical job in educating our young students should be treated. No doubt this is a complex problem in terms of student behavior and what should happen and resources needed for whether it be increasing mental health problems and others. But I do think we need to take the first step in saying that we trust our teachers as professionals. We trust their training and their judgment to know that if a student should not be in the classroom because they pose a threat and a danger, that we respect that decision. And the rest, again, will perhaps follow with more discussions and a working group and other things. But I think our teachers need to know that we and their administrations have their backs. I think that's important. And that's the goal of the bill that I presented today. So I just want to thank committee for their discussion. I'd be happy to follow up with members individually on some of the really good suggestions you made to me today.
And with that, Mr. Strom, quick housekeeping, if you would send that physical assault definition out to the members, follow up on that, that would probably be helpful. And with that, the chair renews the motion to refer to Ways and Means with the chair's intention to lay over. House file 3679 is laid over for possible inclusion. And Representative Slocum, House file 3500. And you talked about your agility and quickness. You have 30 seconds to get us back on track. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Are we going to get the House File 3199? Because I know there's at least two testifiers here that have come at least 240 miles to testify. So if we continue at the same pace, we might not get there. So I know there's folks in the audience who have come quite a ways to testify.
Okay, so yes, I agree. And so here's what we'll do, because you're absolutely right. If we continue at this pace, we won't get it. This bill will be laid over at 10 after, so we can keep moving through. So yes, we can get to that bill. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And any help that the committee can give to move along would be great.
Just go. Wind them up. Welcome. Let's go.
Okay, let's wind them up and start her out. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for hearing this bill, although you are a co-author. So it was hopeful.
That bodes well for you, Representative Sol.
This bill is what it says it is. There really isn't a lot of complicated stuff here. It certainly isn't anywhere near as complicated as the last one, the last bill we heard. Needless to say, and I voiced my disappointment over the task force that had been tasked with cutting special ed paperwork. Basically, what they did was they offered trainings so that people could use more effectively, possibly, the online courses, the online paperwork. So instead of cutting the work, they increased the work by now these teachers that are teaching special ed have to go to trainings and get trained. There was really no cut in the workload. Special ed teachers are in a shortage right now in our state. Many districts are having a really difficult time hiring special ed teachers. And one of the big reasons is because the paperwork is daunting and ongoing and does not let up. I have two daughters that teach special ed. I get it at home big time. When are you going to do something about this? When are you going to do something? Well, I can't just run legislation for my daughters, though I'd love to. So what this bill does is it says that we're going using existing budgetary resources. So no money in this bill, fiscally neutral. The Department of Ed is supposed to identify and remove 25% of the paperwork burden on Minnesota special education teachers from state, not federally mandated, special education compliance reporting requirements. It is what it is. It says so right there. Pretty simple bill. I have three testifiers.
You've got me.
I've got you. I have Grace Kelleher, who will offer some testimony. I have Brad Lundell, who will offer some testimony. And Adosh is going to, also my friend, who used to be my friend.
Thank you, Representative Slocum. Ms. Kelleher.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and it's an honor and a privilege to sit here with Representative Slocum. And I certainly know the power of daughters. I have two at home, so I appreciate that yours have such good eyes. Apples don't fall far from the tree. But I wanted to talk about this bill and why it's important. I served on a special education task force that looked at statutes and rules. MSBA brought in attorneys. We wrote this huge report talking about duplication and things we could do going forward. And it proceeded to sit on the shelf. And Slocum shared this last paperwork burden. We were sure that we would lessen paperwork. And yet again, we seemed just unable to do that. And I think every side contributes. I'm not here to point a finger. But we really do need our special ed teachers, and we really need them to take time with students and not with paper. So with that, I'll be happy to answer questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. I think we'll go ahead and hear from Mr. Lundell, and then we have questions, we'll go to that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell here today on behalf of the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, also coming in strong support of Representative Slocum's bill. As Ms. Kelleher said, and I think that other people here that have worked on these task forces, there have been numerous task forces on paperwork reduction, and none of them seem to net the reduction that that's really needed. I think that Education Minnesota did a survey of special education teachers a couple of years ago, and the number of people that are leaving special education is astronomical. It's hard to get special education teachers, and paperwork is always cited as one of the main barriers to keeping teachers and barriers to entering, and then a reason for leaving. I think the strength of this bill is that I think we just need to go to the department, to the Monitoring and Compliance Division, and sit down with them and figure out what it is that is being required of school districts, and then kind of talking that through. I think those people are working hard to make sure laws are followed, but I think that there are some times here where what is happening as those folks go out is that there gets to be a lot of I-dotting and T-crossing. Almost a matter of letters mixed up there, but I think that just having that conversation and looking at some of the things the legislative auditor talked about a few years ago and really sitting down, taking the system apart, putting it back together, and finding out what kinds of paperwork are out there. I think that the online reporting that's been talked about, and Representative Slocum really said this eloquently, it's not the means of reporting that's the problem. It's the amount that's required to be reported that's the problem. And I think I think that the online system, if that ever gets online, it may be helpful for some districts, but it's not going to reduce the volume of paperwork that's going to need to be done. So we're very supportive of what Representative Slocum is trying to do here and stand ready to help her and help this committee as it moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Mr. Winkler, did you desire to testify?
Yes.
Right.
Paul Winkler from Education Minnesota. We have about 5,000 special ed teachers that work with Education Minnesota, and we recently did a survey around this issue of caseload and workload. Representative Dabney has authored a bill on caseload. Our members are sort of torn between caseload and workload. We are having so many problems of trying to reduce paperwork in the last few years without any results, so we said, well, let's lower the number of students they're having. So we have 5,000 members, and we had a survey, and here are the results from 2,500 of our members. So that's half of our teachers. So this will be about caseload and workload. My special education caseload has increased since I began working in special education, 76%. The number of students I'm assigned and work with affects the level of service and attention I can provide each student. 94%. This paperwork is actually causing them to do more paperwork than work with children. We just had teachers in today from St. Louis Park. They have 14 special ed teachers working with their level one and level two students, and two of them are only assigned to do paperwork. They don't even work with children. I currently feel overwhelmed with my current special education workload, 79%. I know colleagues who have left special education or education as a result of high workloads, 85%. Our district has trouble filling special education positions, 75%. These workloads and caseloads are a significant factor in contributing to the shortage of special education teachers, 85%. We're having not only do we have a recruitment problem for special education teachers, they know what they face when they get into the system. And it's gobs of special education paperwork, and they are leaving, and that's why we have a shortage all across the state. So I appreciate these efforts on behalf of reducing paperwork. It is a driving effort, a driving reason why they are leaving. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Winkler. And then Mr. Cordy from the department.
Good Madam Chair, members, Darren Cordy, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify on this bill and for Representative Slocum for her commitment to this issue. You know, it's something that the Commissioner and the Governor have spoken about multiple times. You know, we're committed to reducing special education reporting requirements as well. But yeah, I want to point out that there's not a single piece of reporting that's required by MDE that's not also required by some state or federal law. And so we have had task force in the past, which people have talked about here, that have examined how states' requirements go above and beyond what's at the federal level. So we have a list of laws that you can go through and see which are the ones that are adding this extra state burden of paperwork. And what we would ask, rather than picking this 25% number that needs to be eliminated every year, is that we work with the legislature and actually go through each of those items that where state exceeds federal. There's been a lot of conversations about that, and if there's things that the legislature feels should not be enforced anymore, then let's repeal those laws. But let's not create a situation where the department is going to be telling districts, you know, these laws are on the books, but now you don't have to do this reporting anymore because we've made that decision. And I want to talk about the 25% number a little bit as well. You know, I don't think that 25% is a magic number. I think we need to do a little bit of research to make sure that 25% is the right amount. Is that too much? Is it too little? We don't want to be put into a situation where there are good laws that are on the books, yet we're putting them aside in order to meet this 25% requirement every year. And then also wanted to just put in a plug, since the online IEP system was mentioned. You know, we have talked about that there are these requirements that are in state and federal law for the amount of paperwork, and the online IEP system is not going to change that, but it is going to greatly streamline the process and reduce a lot of the duplication that happens, especially when you have a child who's coming in from another district into your district. It takes away a lot of that manual inputs. You'll have instantaneous transfer of records, and as I said, some increased efficiency there. You know, a lot of these state reporting requirements that exceed federal law were put in place for a reason, and they were fought for really hard by disability advocates. And I just want to be sure that before moving forward with somebody like this, that we have a conversation about how we're going to do this analysis and how we're going to determine what school districts no longer have to follow. And I think that a more sound approach would be to have that conversation with the legislature and repeal those laws rather than having us direct districts to just ignore them.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. Members, in the interest of time, I know there may be a question or two. We are going to lay this bill over, and we do have to move to a bill that we've got to actually act on today because of the deadline pressure. So I'm going to actually ask Representative Slocum for any final comments before we lay this over.
I will be brief, Madam Chair. Thank you. With the lackadaisical recommendations on the Special Ed Paperwork Task Force, I'm unwilling to accept task forces to nowhere, and I think this is something that absolutely needs to get done, and I'm done.
Thank you, Reverend Slocum. And with that, renews her motion that House File 3500 be laid over today. So thank you, Representative Slocum. I appreciate it. All right, Representative Crescia. We will now turn to House File 3129.
There we go. Okay. Yep, 4 minutes.
So with that, I'll go ahead and move House File 3129. Representative Crescia moves that bill be referred to State Government Finance. And you do have an author's amendment, Representative Crescia, so why don't you go ahead and let's do that so that the bill is in the shape that the author would like.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would move the A2 amendment, which gets rid of an incorrect language that we had in the previous committee, which would have made all schools ineligible, new schools for the PEEP plan. That was never the intent. This language will clear that up.
All right, very good. So the question then is on the A2 amendments. Any questions for the author? Seeing none, all in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, A2 amendment is is adopted. Representative Crescia, to your bill.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And members, I actually, part of me was not excited about this conversation, part of me was, and just because it's in the middle. We're in the middle of a very difficult conversation, but as I thought through this last night and I came to this, that's what we do is we have hard conversations. And so, in the interest of time, I'm going to make a very quick comment, then I'm going to get to testifiers. But here's what I want you to think about, and what I'm asking from you as a committee is to help me arbitrate this very difficult conversation. We have folks on both sides that are trying to navigate health insurance laws and regulations that can be very inconsistent across the board. And so with that, the three points that I'm going to raise in my bill are this. I'm asking you to help me on this. Either all schools go to every 2 years, or we allow schools to go to a four-year cycle and agree upon those terms mutually with the administration and the exclusive representation. The second thing is we either name all vendors in that process or we name none, because right now we're picking and choosing. And the third thing that I'm going to ask is to help me arbitrate is we define the collective bargaining statute. We either agree that that collective bargaining statute is good and that both sides should work this out and come to agreement, or we go to what we have here, which is we allow one side to unilaterally be able to pull out, and that's the exclusive representation of the teachers. And here's the unintended consequence of that. When we allow one side to simply pull themselves out, and it may be for great intentions, and it may be to get into the public employee insurance program, that unintended consequence is that the cafeteria workers, the custodians, paraprofessionals now lose their access to a risk pool, and therefore they get put in a situation where their rates will go up. I had the perfect example of this in Little Falls, where they had the PEEP bid that was a little bit higher than the other bids, and had they pulled out, they would have inadvertently hurt the custodians, the cafeteria workers, and the paraprofessionals. And they chose, and I give them a lot of credit, they chose to come back to the table and say, no, we want to keep our larger pool so that everybody can benefit from that pool. I will tell you this is a very complex issue. There's a lot involved with this. All the best intentions of the world that we try to do here have carved out situations that every school is trying to manage. And with that, I'm going to go to our testifiers. I'm going to ask you to help me with this. I know Representative Marquardt has been great listening. We had some wonderful meetings. I'm just trying to get through this. So with that, I'll turn it over to my first testifier.
Hi, I'm Julie Sink, and I'm representing MASBO, the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. We, as school districts, are finding it very difficult to understand also why one particular organization, a very successful and business-savvy organization, is being pointed out in the bill itself, and we have to ask them specifically for a bid. We feel like it's equality for all of, and when we go out for a bid, I should say that when we go out for a bid, we're expecting that they are all equally responding to the RFP. And so we're asking why we have to request one specifically compete when none of the others are called out. And we just think it's more of an equality thing, that it's important that we keep things on an equal footing for all. It certainly gives an unfair advantage to people. It is difficult for school districts on the second point of arbitrarily moving to PEEP by the exclusive representatives. It's very difficult for school district administrators to try and make sure that all of our employees, which are very important to the education of our students, that we are successful in providing those benefits on an equal footing to all of our staff. And by one having the ability to pull out, it certainly does hurt all the remaining group as we try to do things more equally between with our benefits with our employees. And I do think it is difficult when we are trying to maintain and build relationships with our providers when we do with these RFPs. It's difficult for our employees to think that every 2 years they could possibly be changing their health insurance. You know, I challenge you to think about yourselves and your own health insurance, thinking I could possibly switch from one provider to the other, and what does that do for me personally? It's difficult to think about. Health insurance is extremely complex, personally, much less on the broad sense regarding the Affordable Care Act and all of those other requirements that we have on ourselves and our businesses. And to think that we would switch those every 2 years, potentially switch them every 2 years, I think is very difficult. So we would like to look at something like a four-year look at that, and certainly school districts would have the opportunity to bid them if they felt it was a requirement or something that would help our districts. And we would certainly bid them earlier if we needed to do that. But I think every 4 years is certainly something that we would look at, would help us maintain and possibly keep our rates lower. I think one of the things that is difficult is when businesses or those the five, big five, would look at our business, our pool of business, they would say, okay, we know we only potentially have them for 2 years. So we have to make sure that we raise those rates so, because our risk out there is greater because we potentially only have them for 2 years. So it's something that we would want to look at and say we want to build that relationship with them to keep our rates lower.
Thank you. All right. If you would stay close by for questions. We do have several other testifiers. So I'll have you come down in groups. Beth Tollefson and Matt, I think it's Wilmes. And then the next group, and if the rest of you want to be kind of in the chairs behind the testifier table, that would be helpful. Okay, then I have a group of four people from Caledonia and Maple Canton. And then three testifiers from Litchfield. So we'll start with Beth Tollefson and Matt Lomas. Welcome. And if each of you would please just state your name for the record before you begin your testimony.
I'm Beth Tollefson.
All right, can please go ahead.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am Beth Tollefson of Dilworth Glendon Felton School District. I'm a business education teacher in my 18th year, and I'm serving my first term as our local president. I've been involved in negotiations for the past 10 years. Also, I am a proud teaching colleague of Representative Paul Marquardt. I'm speaking to you today out of concern of proposed House File 3129, and I wish to tell you DGF's story about getting insurance bids and how the proposed bill could affect school districts going forward and why we believe we benefit from it. I'm currently not on the district's insurance. I'm covered on my husband's family plan through Moorhead Public Schools, which is the neighboring district. However, as a union rep, every 2 years I would sit in on the insurance meetings conducted by our superintendent. He would invite employees of Lakes Country Service Co-op and Blue Cross Blue Shield to explain the next cycle's changes in both plan coverages and premium increases. We would be presented with a menu of four choices chosen by LCSC. Whenever we would ask about getting a plus one account or a health savings account, we were told it was too expensive and other employees would have to give up their plans, which is difficult to do once you're used to your plan. In the 2012-2014 cycle, an HSA plan was added, where if we purchased a premium, any remaining money from our $5,066 the district contributes to each teacher could be put into an HSA or VEBA account. Finally, many of us were able to not forego the thousands of dollars in unclaimed benefits as we had for several years. That situation was short-lived as Moorhead pulled out of the LCSC pool. The next cycle's increase was 9.8%, but after a catastrophic incident, our premiums surged 45%. The small LCSC pool of approximately 2,600 could not handle one large claim without a huge loss. That was in 2014. The year that the Health and Insurance Transparency Act was enacted. By the time it was voted in by the legislature, our local had already voted on the new plans that Lakes Country and Blue Cross Blue Shield and PEEP had bid. As in all years past, we would wait for the district to receive the bids, and then they would hold the meetings to share the bid numbers out to employees. Every year, Lakes Country and Blue Cross Blue Shield would wait for the PEEP numbers to come in, and then miraculously, they were able to offer plans for less money. Then, the following year, we could plan on significant increase so they could recoup their money from the previous cycle. It happened like clockwork. In the spring of 2015, the first year of HIDA, I, along with two local representatives, sat down with the superintendent and opened the sealed bids together, as required of HIDA. Lakes Country and Blue Cross Blue Shield proposed another 45% increase, but we were able to unilaterally join PEEP just at just a 15 to 21% increase, depending on the plan. We were also able to get the Plus One plan that we had been requesting. Last week, we received a message from the district office regarding Pete's new health insurance rates. The price difference for the different plans ranged from a 6.2% increase to a 1.2% decrease. We truly believe that had it not been for HIDA, we would still be under the direction of the Service Co-op and Blue Cross Blue Shield, and we would be paying much higher premiums than we are currently paying. Because HIDA required DGF to receive a PEAT bid and to have the superintendent open the sealed bids with union representation present, there was a push to find the best plans at a lower cost. HIDA made that process transparent, and it was a benefit to DGF, as it is and should be for all school districts. Please consider my story when you are voting no on Bill 3129. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, members of the committee. My name is Matthew Wilmus. I'm from Lewiston, and I teach at Lewiston Altura Public Schools. In 2011, we are looking at insurance, and the last offer that we received from Health Partners was for a premium that included a $4,000 deductible. The teachers looked at all of the plans that were available, and we decided to go with PEAT due to its lower deductible. Later that year, I personally went to the doctor for a physical, and some abnormalities showed up in my blood work. Had I had a $4,000 deductible, I'm certain I would not have gone back to the doctor, because I'm young and I'll be fine, it'll be fine. But because I had a much lower deductible, I did in fact go back to the doctor for two more visits, discovering that I had latent strep, and that had I waited even a few more weeks, I could have attacked my internal organs. So the lower deductible made a significant difference in my life. Also, I would like to point out that when we went to PEAT, the teachers went alone. The rest of the district chose not to go along with us, which benefited the rest of the district very much so, because the premiums that the rest of the district employees got were much lower because the teachers had left the group. This was, in fact, proven true again 2 years following that, when the union had the opportunity to go back in with the school district on the district plan, and when we looked at those numbers, if the teachers had gone back into the pool with the rest of the district, that would have forced an increase in premiums for everyone else. Our teachers looked at that and decided that we could not do that to the people we work with every day, and for that reason, we decided to stick with Pete. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmus. All right, and now we'll move to the next group. We're from Caledonia, Maple Canton. And again, if each of you would just state your names before beginning your testimony. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roger Knudsen. I've been teaching science in Caledonia for 31 years. The HIDA laws have allowed us the opportunity to bring PEAT bids into our insurance discussions. We have had one carrier that we deal with, one that gives us a bid. The competition that PEAT provides is tremendous to us. Prior to the PEAT bids coming in, our insurance increases were double digits and often in the 20s and even 30%. Since we have been allowed to bring PEAT bids in, our insurance increases are single digit, with most of the time under 5%. Now, we do not currently have PEAT. We have never accepted a PEAT bid. But the competition that provides for us is invaluable. We're in trouble down there insurance-wise. And just a real brief example, if you want to have family insurance in Caledonia, it's going to cost you $1,300 a month out of your pocket. That is above and beyond the school district's contribution. We offer family insurance, but we don't have anyone that can afford it. And we need help.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Heather Wilder, and I'm a middle school and high school English teacher at Maple Canton Public Schools. I am married, and I have two young sons, so my husband and I are working very hard to provide for our family. One challenge, however, is the cost of our health insurance. Currently, as embarrassing as it is to say, I take home $105 after only paying my health insurance, daycare, our mortgage, and medical bills. In fact, I personally pay $543 more for my health insurance than I do for my mortgage. Wow. Because of this, I've considered going back to my previous job as a bank teller because I made more as a head teller at Merchants Bank and had better benefits in that position that didn't require a degree.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Katie Larson, and I am the band director for Mabel Canton Public Schools. I've worked in rural southeastern Minnesota for the past 11 years while completing my master's degree. I love being in a small community, and I love getting to know and teach my students. The hardship, though, is the cost of health insurance. I pay $943 for my family health insurance plan, and I have a high deductible of $5,200. When my children are sick, my husband and I have discussions on when would be the best time to take them into the doctor, considering that we need to pay $5,200 out of pocket before our insurance kicks in. If we can do anything and keep competition in the health insurance coverage, that is going to greatly improve our way of life.
Thank you. All right, and I think this is the group from Litchfield. Very good. So welcome, and again, just please state your name before you begin your testimony.
My name is Tammy Knapper, Chair Loon, members of the committee. I've been a special education teacher in the Wilma area for 22 years. In that time, we have seen a continued growth in the cost of health care. A larger and larger portion of that cost has been shifted to the employees, both in terms of premium cost and plan design. For example, in Wilmer in 2011-12, we were looking at an increase between 17 and 65% from our service cooperative. We decided to get a competitive bid. The co-op then came back with a negative 5% increase. But the plan design had changed. Employees picked up more of the cost, and the coverage decreased. We must do all we can to control these costs. The HIDA legislation has created a greater voice for employees, increase the transparency and awareness in the request for proposal process, and created a more competitive environment. A common comparative tool was aided in that process. I respectfully request you do not support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Rose Lent. I have taught elementary school in Litchfield for 18 years. The HIDA process has allowed our local to have a greater voice in the group health selection process. When I started on our insurance committee, our increases would start at 20% or more and then roller coaster up and down. Those quotes all came from one broker. The HIDA process allowed us to bring a separate, more competitive bid that stabilized our renewal rates. We are seeing the bids from entities that we have not seen before. This has allowed a broader group of entities to examine and compare to aid in the controlling health care costs. I respectfully request that you do not support this proposed legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Loon and members of the committee. My name is Minda Henjum, and I have taught elementary school in Central Minnesota for 18 years. I have been actively involved in our insurance committee at our school, and I do realize the complexities of health insurance. The HIDA process has created clear competition among our insurance providers. Prior to HIDA, our yearly health insurance rates would increase and fluctuating from 20%, often even higher. Eventually, they'd finish 7% or so, but we'd play this game of what were our increases going to be. Of course, these lower rates would also come with lower coverages from our plan, higher deductibles, higher out-of-pockets. Since HIDA, the competitive bid we received from the large pool, being PEEP, has helped our rates increase stabilization. We've even seen even a small 2% increase 1 year. We've not gone with PEEP, but it totally is because of the competitive bid from PEEP that we see the other providers bring in that small rate. Our plans have also remained fairly constant, little change in deductibles, out-of-pockets, and coverage. I hope you will consider leaving the current HIDA legislation in place and not support this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Did we get all of, I know there were several groups that came, everybody who wanted to testify there. And then I think Representative Krista, if you had wanted to make a comment, but Ms. Kelleher, I had you on the list. Did you want to testify? You want to come down? All right. Representative Krista.
Thank you. And everything you've heard here is true. And I don't dispute any of that. And here's what I would like to offer. This bill does nothing to change the bid process. school districts still have to get three bids. Everybody still has to be present to open those bids. This bill does not address that. What this bill does do is not name a specific vendor. Why is that important? And PEEP is probably, they're doing a very good job. You can still, as a school district, solicit a PEEP bid. You just have to ask for it. But if instead of PEEP we had named Blue Cross or Health Partners or Medica, that would be a problem. And so what I say to this is, as those of us who are writing state policy, I'm trying to write fair and equitable policy and not give preferential treatment. Because as the winds of elections go, would we be okay if Health Partners ain't named now? Why don't we just say school districts have to go to Health Partners, Medica, Blue Cross, and PEEP? Why don't we just name the process for them? The reason is because we believe in local control. We believe in citizens being part of school boards and allowing them to make those decisions. To all these schools, I hope you continue to get PEEP bids. In fact, I hope we flood them with RFPs. But let's not make it into statute. Let's allow that to happen through the decision-making process.
Madam Chairman,
Member Ms. Kelleher.
Good afternoon.
Thank you.
I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we're here supporting Representative Kreisch's bill. And as I listened to the testifiers, I sort of felt like we went back to 2013 about should this go into law or shouldn't it? And it went into law, and actually, as you've heard, we've had some very productive stories. I looked at this bill as not much change. The really big change item is going from a two-year bid to a four-year bid. Just because it bids every 2 years doesn't mean you necessarily get the bottom line bid. They have 4 years on, you might be getting additional bids. And I think for state law to be a limiting factor that way hurts. I also feel pretty strongly that all vendors, you know, vendors have created competition. And it's competition that have kept prices low. Why name PEEP per se if there might be three other vendors you want to actually do together? And once again, it's a collaborative process. The idea is that one side or the other had the upper hand does not exist anymore. And so, Madam Chairman, this is just two small things that might really improve on where we are today.
Thank you. Representative Christian?
Thank you. And very one quick thing on the two-year thing, something to think about. If we believe that 2 years is the right cycle, then why in statute did we codify that if you're in PEEP, you automatically renew and don't have to go through that process? That's an issue, folks. So if we're saying it's great to go out and get three bids every 2 years, but if you're in this one program, you don't have to do that. And the problem is that, I mean, what we've done is we've carved out and made this very complicated for school districts across the state, and it's very difficult in the rural areas for these small schools that are just trying to manage the incredibly high healthcare costs. So I want you to think about, I mean, if the 2 years is the right thing, why did we codify in statute that some don't have to do it and some do? That just doesn't seem equitable.
Right, thank you. Representative Markbart.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Representative Kreisch bringing this discussion forward. I especially want to thank all the testifiers and Ms. Tollefson, who's from Dilworth Blood and Felden, who, if she didn't come over and help me with the smart board in the morning, sometimes I wouldn't get class going. So, and she's also here with Ms. Erickson from DGF, so that's great. You know, I voted for this bill, and I think the premise of it is excellent in the fact that you're going out and getting more bids. But I do think there is a fundamental flaw in the bill, in the law, not in the bill, in the law, that will really hinder its success into the future. And it is this, that school districts are being treated differently. And for example, a self-insured district is exempt from this if they're self-insured on or before the date of enactment, that's one, or after enactment if they're self-insured but then they have to have 1,000 or more insured lives, a second difference, or a district in which the school board adopted a motion on or before May 14th. Three differences in rules there. The fourth one then, if you are not self-insured, that's a fourth. And then a fifth is if you go with PEEP, if you go into the PEEP law, it's not a two-year thing. If the teachers agree, it's automatically kicked over for another 2 years. So you have five different playing fields. And the best way to always put a law under scrutiny is to have different playing fields. And I've seen that. I could use local government aid for an example. But what I have heard is a frustration from small rural school districts saying, why am I being forced to do something that larger metro districts, for the most part, are not? And that is going to always be a huge thing. I think we've got something good, and I think Representative Kreisha thinks we've got something good that actually will get to the root of the problem. But I will tell you that if we don't fix this uneven playing field, or at least the impression that it's uneven, the political whims every year, every 2 years, we're going to be back here doing this. And I want to make it work. And so that's all I would say is, you know, I think PEEP, adding PEEP is working. Then let's require every district, every single district, to go out and seek a PEEP bid. Then we're all on the same playing field. But when you sit and carve things out here, that's what's going to create the scrutiny and the lack of kind of people looking at this and saying, I don't know if this is credible or not. So those are my 2 cents worth on this. But I think the discussion is good. And if we really want this to work into the long term successfully, I think we do have to address this inequality among districts.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you wish to testify?
Please.
All right, please come forward. And because we are over time, I will ask you to be very brief, but state your name for the record.
I can be extremely brief. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Schmiesig, and I work in Education Minnesota. I'm a 34-year, I did teach high school chemistry and physics for 34 years, and I now work in the Negotiations Department for Education Minnesota. My experience in working with the insurance renewal process over the past 2 years is that the HITA process has been extremely valuable to our members. They have received very competitive bids. They have been involved in the process. It has created a much better environment for our members to get renewals. I appreciate the fact that we are having this discussion. I also appreciate the fact that HITA has been very, very successful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate your brevity. All right. Any final comments, Representative Kreisha?
Just one thing to remind, we keep saying the HITA process. The contract process in 471-6161 is what governs this. The process that when any public entity goes out for a bid, they have to get three. That is not the HITA process. HITA is part of that now. But remember, when you go out for an RFP, all public entities are held to this. My bill does not take that away. My bill encourages, go get your three bids, go get your 10 bids. Find the best ones and work with the exclusive representatives and the administrators to come to agreement. We've seen time and time again where teachers and superintendents have sat up here together and collaborated. I think they can continue to do that. So I appreciate the discussion, and I will keep having those as we go forward if you'll allow this bill to go forward.
All right. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. And with that, Representative Kreisha renews his motion that House File 3129 as amended be referred to State Government Finance. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
All right. Motion passes. Bill is on its way to State Government Finance. Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Members, you know what that means. The rest of our agenda goes on, added to tomorrow's, and we will continue to soldier on as best we can. Committee is adjourned.